Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news-ad-free. That's amazon.com/news-ad-free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
UK Tech Weekly Podcast.
Believe it or not, we've been working hard to bring you not only flaming hot content, but a veritable vindaloo of a podcast today, listener, as we charge into the weekend with the wild abandon of a Zuckerberg backyard VR webcast. Joining me are compadres Scott Carey, editor of Computer World UK.
Hello.
And tech advisor staff writer Sean Bradley.
Hi there.
Hello. And tech news has simmered to a manageable rolling ball this week, so we're back. And we're here with three cyber stuffed dumplings to chew on for some minutes. Let's cook. So, Scott, you're a Gmail user, and so am I. So is Sean, and daily, so are 1.4 billion people. Mm. But in the business space, at least, it's G Suite subscriptions pale in comparison to Outlook's. But there are changes coming for businesses and consumers. Have we actually been craving the changes that Google has made to Gmail this week?
Yeah, so Gmail have made a huge amount of changes to Gmail this week. They won't be unusual to anyone that uses Inbox by Gmail, which is their kind of cutting edge like email product, which doesn't really look like an inbox. It looks more like a feed.
Yeah.
And that's where they actually admitted on a call this week with us that that's kind of where they test bed all of their new features for, mm-hmm. for Gmail before rolling it out to all their main users. So anyone that's used the mobile app or specifically the Inbox app will be familiar with this.
So for anyone who doesn't know, what does Inbox do that Gmail doesn't?
Yeah, so Inbox will basically prioritize emails in terms of importance instead of sort of timeliness.
Yep.
And it will look a bit more like a Facebook feed. And then you can do some stuff like you can snooze emails and they'll pop back up eventually if you're busy, or you can it will nudge you to respond to an email that you maybe haven't looked at for a couple of days.
Yep.
It uses a lot of machine learning to kind of like categorize emails in a different way. I tried it, didn't love it, but a lot of people do like
it. It's kind of a workflow that's difficult to get into. I tried it as well, but you kind of, for me anyway, ended up not trusting that it was showing me what I needed to see. Is that where the problem lies for
it? I think so.
Yeah. So Gmail is undertaking a lot of those changes now.
Yeah, so Gmail has had its first big redesign in about 5 years, I think 2013.
It's a long was the time. Last time. It does look old.
Yeah.
On desktop, we're talking here, aren't we? Not mobile.
Yeah, we're talking on desktop, yeah. Mobile gets a little bit more incremental updates. And myself and a few journalists sat on a Hangouts with Jacob Bank, who's one of the lead product managers at Gmail, early this week to talk through a lot of this stuff. And he was quite forthright in the fact that to bring a lot of these features to 1.4 billion Gmail users, they had to actually do a lot of sort of ground up redesign work. Things like offline, full function offline capability. So back in the day with Gmail, like especially if you were using it on desktop, if you're offline, it didn't really work. It basically shut down and you couldn't click into emails, which has been a problem for me when I've gone to things and I need to pull out like a booking reference or something and I can't get in there. So they've ground up rewritten the app so that you now basically can look at your last, I think, sort of something like 60, 80 emails offline, and then everything will just sync back up once you get back online. So that's good for if you're flying or if you're on the tube or anything like that. And that's now come to desktop instead of just on mobile. He also talked about the difficulties of some of the new security features they brought in. So I think the fact that they've had to do a lot of work there means that's why you haven't seen these updates all come incrementally. They've all come in one big bang because they've had to do it all at once. But what he did do is he broke down like the changes to Gmail into three buckets. So
love me a bucket.
Yeah, so they want it to be the most secure browser, the easiest to use, and the smartest. And everything that they've announced this week falls broadly into one of those areas. The thing that's interesting for me is as you said, like this is a hugely popular consumer email app, but not quite as popular in the enterprise.
Mm-hmm.
Microsoft and Google now are 100% the two big players in that space in terms of Office tools like your word processors and all of your G Suite and Office stuff, but also email is a huge pillar of that. So what they're definitely trying to do is compete better with Outlook, which has always been good on the security side, on giving lots of granular admin controls. You know, you can link up with your directory, so if someone leaves the company, then they lose all their rights to send sensitive documents and stuff like that. So what they've been really focusing on is cutting down on phishing. So the way they do that is the way that they kind of categorize for spam. So they'll scan your inbox, scan all the messages, and then they will assign them a sort of a risk factor out of 100 in terms of whether it looks like a phishing attack. And then they'll basically put a very, very red or very yellow banner at the top saying this looks like a phishing email. Please don't open the attachment in case you're, unless you're 100% sure. And then they've also set up this other thing called confidential mode, which is if you're sending something that's extremely secure or extremely sensitive, then you can set parameters. So after 10 days, that piece of content will explode.
Yeah, bringing some Snapchat vibes to Gmail.
Because
as well as that, you have attachments appearing in line, which is looks weird.
But yeah, they call them... what did they call them? Attachment.
Was it something dumb?
Something stupid.
You can turn that off. That looked weird. But yeah, like you were saying with the, you can take away privileges from certain emails. So supposedly you can unsend emails.
So you can manually revoke access to a piece of content if you're worried about sending it out to the wrong person. So it's a bit like a Dropbox link in the fact that, you know,
it expires.
It expires or the person that's in charge of it can cut off access to it.
What I wanted to know is that they also say you can block forwarding and copying.
Yeah. So you can basically send an email to someone, but then you restrict their ability to forward that or copy the content.
Pretty cool from that level. But then
So the way that works actually, the way that works actually is it's not really email. So it sends you to a sort of protected. You'll get a link.
Leave Gmail, will you? Right.
Yeah, you'll leave Gmail. It will be stored somewhere in like a separate sort of part of the Google Cloud infrastructure, and then that's how they can sort of set all those rules around it.
Okay.
It's definitely a very useful feature, and it's something I think Microsoft users have been able to do. Dropbox has been able to do. I don't know how popular it will be, but it's definitely attractive to maybe, you know, the legal profession or anyone like that who are, if they're looking at G Suite as an option, that might be a handy little feature.
No, definitely. And some of this is more perception than the actual use of the stuff anyway, I'd imagine, like you were saying. Is this what it needs to do to compete with Microsoft at enterprise level?
Or yeah, 100%. This is the same in the Dropbox and Box sort of area of collaboration. It's now all about the perception that it's the most secure or it has very granular admin controls, anything that you want sort of as a, if you're an IT decision maker, it's the sort of stuff that you're sort of checking boxes for when you're going through that procurement process. But then sort of on the sort of the more fun side, they've added a lot of very, very smart features. And one of the journalists on the call actually asked, you know, now that you're sort of scanning emails so that you can prioritize them, does that mean that you can see the content of them? And they were like, we're very strict about this. Basically, it's the algorithm is like looking for signals in the emails, but it's all anonymized and there is no Google engineer that is able to read the content of your emails.
Okay.
So we wanted to get that out of the way. Google also have now stopped advertising against things that are in your inbox. So they've stopped scanning your email to advertise against, which is, you know, really nice of them.
It's always hard for Google to give up any privilege that they have to advertise to you.
But they wanted to be front and center with that. And the benefit of that as a feature now is that, if you send an email and it has a clear signal in it that you're asking for something, so you're asking for an action point or you're asking for a response to a question, if you don't get an answer to that, in 2 days, it will kind of ping you a message being like, do you want to follow this up?
Right.
And then it also works the other way, and the fact that it's like you've got an email in your inbox that you haven't responded to that clearly needs responding to.
Get on with it,
and they'll nudge it back to the top of your inbox.
Do those security, the fact that it will no longer scan your emails, does that apply to the consumer update as well?
Yeah, it's all of these updates are just Gmail wide. Have it as a personal account or whether you have it as a part of a G Suite, it's all the same application. And that's global as well.
I turned it on earlier. If you go to the little settings cog in your inbox,
it might say
try the new Gmail, which is rolling out. Have you tried the new Gmail?
I have not, but I'm looking forward to.
I mean,
it looks a lot nicer.
It does look nicer because I've always thought that Gmail was a very... I don't really use the browser Gmail.
No.
I put it all through a mail client just because I think it looks really dated.
Yeah.
Which might be very superfluous.
Well, that's what I do on my mobile. I go through the Apple Mail app.
Yeah, I use Apple
Mail.
But at
work, I use it.
Oh, yeah.
On my desktop. And it's a bit slower, I've noticed.
Okay.
But that's probably because of the added functionality.
Yeah, everything's a bit more rounded, which is obviously the vibe for the last million years, and new typefaces and such. And then you've also got app integration, which you didn't have before.
Yeah, so this is pretty sweet, actually. So there's a new right-hand...
G-Suite.
Yeah, there's a new right-hand panel where you can pull in other Google apps or add-ons that you have. The main use case I can envision for this off the bat is basically someone says, are you free on Tuesday? You can pull in your Google Calendar in that right-hand panel and quickly look without having to switch tabs or anything like, or whip out your phone. That's extremely useful. They're really pushing hard on tasks. So
yeah, I was
got
about
new,
to say that, yeah.
Whatever, yeah, if you want, yeah.
But that's more with if you have to action something that's within an email, right?
Yeah, it's if you're a very to-do list kind of person, which I'm
because
not.
The other thing is, they're putting Google Keep in there as well, which is kind of like the consumer to-do list version, right?
Yeah.
So tasks is more geared towards business.
Yeah, and you could pull in sort of your Salesforce CRM there if you want to look at like a record while you're in an email, you know, just quickly pull something up like that. So there's a lot of benefit to that, and that means now that the left and right panels are collapsible for the first time, because otherwise it would all be a bit squished in terms of your subject lines in the middle. So I mean, long story short, it all makes a lot of sense, really. All the updates kind of look good. I'm trying to remember what else they kind of announced in terms of bits and pieces.
Is it a surprise to you that it's taken this long?
Not really.
Okay.
I think they could have released some of these smart features earlier. They obviously trialed them in Inbox. They worked. People liked them. They could have probably pushed them out earlier, but it sounds like they've been really busy trying to get that offline functionality and the security features sorted, and then they could announce it all as the new Gmail and get loads of press.
Lots
for
of press
it,
they've got.
Which they did. They got tons
of press.
It got really well covered.
So if these changes are not coming to the Gmail mobile app, does that mean Inbox is going to sort of stagger on as this sort of weird testing ground?
That's exactly what it's going to stay on as. Yeah, it is going to stay on for its small, probably not that small, but its small batch of super users. And those people are going to basically A/B test features for Gmail in the future.
Yeah. It just seems weird to me that it's kind of like used as a mobile app, but then they're trialing stuff that for desktop.
Yeah. Don't know.
Do you use Inbox, Sean?
I don't. No, I'm behind. I need to get on this.
No, I mean, we find it confusing.
Yeah. It's weird how, like, sort of for, like, largely in the past sort of, like, decade or so, the way people use email hasn't really changed all that much. It's always been sort of time-based. You know, that's the way your Inbox works. So these sort of innovations coming forward are quite interesting to watch. So.
Yeah, because with the introduction of things like, Inbox's algorithm to make it more like what you want to see, that's very Instagrammy, isn't it? Taking away messages when you want them to disappear is kind of weirdly Snapchat. Is that where they're getting all their ideas from, the consumer space? I mean, does email need that much of an update? People don't like using it because it seems antiquated, but if it ain't broke.
Well, everyone likes talking about how much we hate email. You know, Slack have built a very successful business off of email not being particularly effective short-term sort of communication channel, but it's not going anywhere. So any sort of incremental improvement you can bring to that experience is a good thing. I personally, have emails that I star and then about 10 days later realize that I haven't responded to them and feel a pang of guilt. So if there's anything that can sort of nudge me in that direction, I have no real problem with that. It's just another example of Google being able to leverage their like huge amount of ability to apply machine learning to a lot of this data and yeah. to make things a little bit smarter, a little bit more intuitive, a little bit less heavy lifting for the user. And that's the direction I think they'll keep going. They'll keep just trying to make it a little bit better. The other thing I thought was interesting was that they're completely redesigning notifications and they're trying to batch them up a bit more now so you don't get one for every email, which seems like a good thing.
Okay, on desktop we're talking
on desktop.
Yeah.
They said that with this new high priority notifications approach, they're going to cut down push notifications by 97%. Which just like
that seems good.
As someone that turns off their push notifications, I shudder to think that there are actually people out there that are getting that many push notifications.
Yes, they're infuriating.
But I guess I do on my desktop. I guess I do get email notifications in the top right corner of my computer.
You just so learned to ignore them.
I've just learned to ignore them.
Yeah. Crazy. Yeah, actually, I know I do as well.
Yeah?
Yeah. Maybe I don't get that many emails. Well, I'll definitely be using it. I don't know if I'll switch to it permanently.
I don't think we, as IDG employees, are ever going to see this
no.
on our work email. Because I don't think anyone knows who has the admin rights. So.
Little insider info for you there, listener. Thanks a lot for that, Scott. We will segue beautifully after my question into another Google conversation. But first of all, Scott, Gmail or Gfail?
Oh, nice. Yeah, no, it's Gmail for me. I am a user. I will continue to be a user. And I think these are all pretty good little bits and pieces they've added.
Sean?
Yeah, I agree. I think it's interesting the direction they're taking with it. So, yeah, interesting what happens.
Click on your cog, everyone. Yep. See if you can try it. But download Inbox on your mobile if you want the same experience. We will be right back to chat about chat.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
For years now, iPhone users have toiled with us pesky green bubble users. We've been wondering if Apple will ever release iMessage for Android or if Google will build an Android alternative. It kind of is now, but it's really confusing.
Real.
So it's just called Chat. It's not Google Chat, and it's not Android Chat.
Brave.
It's a new standard which Google is implementing along with operators based on rich communication services, which is RCS. Before I get into that...
So is it SMS or is it like WhatsApp?
It is for the SMS application on your phone,
okay.
On an Android phone. So you'll both probably be aware, Scott, you mentioned that Hangouts, but that used to be a consumer product that has now become an enterprise play for Google. If you actually go back to even pre-Android, there were things called Google Chat, actually, ironically, and Google Talk, which died a death. Last year, you might remember, maybe 2 years ago, Google released Allo, which everyone thought was them trying to do an iMessage. But it turned out that that was an app that didn't support SMS. So no one used it.
Yeah.
Because really, you're not going to get your iPhone buddy to download Allo to message you over data connection on Android. They're just going to go use WhatsApp or just send me a green bubble.
Yeah.
So this is actually a little bit of a curveball from Google. What it's done, it's before it announced it, it gave the exclusive to The Verge, because that's what everyone does now. They have approached about 50 operators worldwide. And this is something that an operator has to say yes to turn on. Because rich communication services is like a thing. Apple are not subscribed to this way of thinking, but it allows SMS to kind of evolve, if you like. It allows it to be more flexible. So it's an operator-based service, not a Google one. It's not encrypted, which is a bit...
lovely.
But SMS can't really be, by virtue of how it works, basically. And the reason that Apple got away with doing iMessage is just because they did it first, and they had so much leverage at a time where about 5 years ago iMessage came out.
Yeah.
Maybe longer, 2011. So the iPhone... the carriers couldn't say no to Google at that time. And I think if Google had done it, they may have got away with it. But now what they're basically having to do, this will allow, on your phone, most people nowadays use the Android Messages app, which is a Google app. When you open that and send a text message, if you were on Vodafone and you sent a text to your mate who has another brand of Android phone on O2, the idea is that you'll see typing indicators, you get read receipts, you can send, as rich communication services suggest, richer media. Because like at the moment, I don't know if the last time any of you sent an image or a video over SMS, but it's rubbish.
Yeah.
Doesn't scale high res. It's like a little tiny box in the middle of your screen. The person might not want to download it. They might be annoyed that it costs them 30p. It's like, it's mad that it's still a thing. but this will mean that you can do that, and you can also have group chats as well, which I find a massive pain. On Android, if you want to like start a text conversation with someone, you can only just send blanket text to somebody. You won't get the message back in the same thread, you'll get it back individually. This changes that, but it's really confusing. Do you kind of understand that vague overview of what they've done?
It's iMessage for Android, right?
That's what,
in a nutshell,
it kind of is, but it isn't, because it's not actually a Google product. It's a new standard that they've coined called chat.
Yeah, and it's not sending over the web, it's sending via SMS.
No, it is sending over data.
Okay.
It does send over data, but it falls back to plain old SMS.
Yeah, like
iMessage. Okay. But it won't, it's more fragmented in that they need operators on board, and they need people to actually use the apps that it's kind of compatible with. So LG and Samsung are on board because they still have stock texting apps. I don't think Huawei are. Don't quote me on that. But most phones now, Android, new ones come preloaded with Android messages.
Yeah, they're going to install this as a standard now.
Yeah. It's apparently the first carrier to turn it on is Sprint in the US.
Yeah.
But it's not like a thing. You don't even have to push an over-the-air update. They just turn it on.
Okay.
So it seems it does seem actually quite clever in its complexity.
Yeah.
Because the way I was thinking about it is that rather than doing the grand, here is iMessage for Android, which I don't think will ever happen, it's kind of a clever way to offer a service that people will end up using unconsciously by virtue of it being good and it just being on their phone.
Yeah.
They're not going, ta-da, here's a new thing, because that's what they've always done. They try to turn Hangouts into a thing, and they said, oh, don't use that anymore, you should be using this. And they brought out Allo because they were trying to compete directly with Facebook Messenger with all those weird stickers and things. But it's actually really hard to get somebody to download a brand new app.
Yeah.
There's a lot, there's a graveyard full of examples of these not working.
Yeah.
Like Microsoft have gone through iteration after iteration of communication solutions, not SMS, but just on the web. They bought Skype for that exact reason.
Yep.
And then I'm hearing a lot of rumors that Slack are working on a consumer version of Slack.
Really?
I mean, that seems doomed to fail as well.
Yeah.
Because you're competing with WhatsApp and there's no point.
Exactly. That's what Google have finally learned. And it seems mad that Android's been around, we're in the 10th year of Android now, and that Google hadn't already worked out how to do this. I think the ubiquity of the iPhone helped that people just sort of start using iMessage and they don't realize it's happening.
Yeah.
So many people have it. You think, oh, text messages are blue. That's cool. And then you suddenly get a green one. It's like, what the hell is this? And it's just ingrained now that some people understand, some people don't really know. Like, for sure, my parents have no idea why it's green and sometimes it's blue.
Sure.
But they don't care because it works.
Yeah.
And I think that'll be the thing with this chat thing. Once it turns on, if you actually use your stock SMS app, which some people do fall back on, my housemate's pain in the ass.
He
never, ever looks at his WhatsApp, and we have a WhatsApp group. So, sorry, Louis, it's a pain.
Yeah, my gran sends me SMSs.
Yeah.
Sent me one for my birthday the other day.
I'm impressed. She can even send you a text message, to be
honest.
Exactly. but this will be a thing where I think if it works, it'll be because gradually you'll suddenly get typing indicators and thinking, oh, this looks a bit more cool. This works. Yeah. And yeah. Like, it's sent over data, so...
It has to be there as a standard, otherwise it's not going to get used. But if it is on your Android when you pick it up, it will get usage.
Yeah. I mean, did you guys know about Allo? Do you remember Allo?
I've heard of Allo. Only because we have an article on Computer World, which is... Google Graveyard and there's all this stuff
that is the prime example. Although interestingly, as a side point, that was released at the same time as Duo, which is its kind of FaceTime clone.
Yeah,
both of these apps are available for iOS, and I read a stat that a quarter of the calls placed to and from Duo are from iPhones. So someone out there is using Duo for calls.
Not me.
It's not me either. Although having thinking about it, I kind of, as a reviewer, flip between Android and iPhone, but when I'm not on iPhone, I don't really use FaceTime anyway, but that would be my go-to. But do you guys ever video call?
I FaceTime, yeah.
You do FaceTime?
Yeah.
What would you, but on Android, the only alternative is you Skype?
You know I don't know what an Android is.
I know. But you'd have to Skype someone, I suppose.
Yeah.
It's not really like a, so I suppose that's why people
are finding
Duo.
Can you not use Hangouts?
I have never dabbled with Hangouts.
No.
I think I only became aware of it like 4 years ago, and even then it seemed like this weird, because people still use it for texting as a consumer product. I just think it passed me by.
It's just like Skype. It's pretty good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, but with the IM as well.
Yeah, it's got both, yeah.
Yeah. I've just never ever used it, because it's not a thing that came pre-installed on any Android.
It's very good for the enterprise, because it's got very intuitive screen sharing, so it's pretty good for stuff like that.
Yeah. Better than whatever Citrix.
Oh, God, yeah.
What do you order?
Citrix.
And even
Skype. Skype never works.
So this is a thing that is happening, and it'll probably happen quite quietly. There was a bit of a splash, and I think it will die down now.
But this must have been just a mammoth project, though, in the back end. Because to get 30 carriers to all agree on
like
something... 50
and then like actual handset manufacturers to say, yeah, we'll build this standard into our... default app.
Yeah, the amount of work and investment and stuff that's gone into it means that they clearly see a huge opportunity here.
Well, I think they've seen the opportunity, but far too late, and this is kind of a compromise for them.
Well, it's always going to be a compromise when you've got that many stakeholders involved.
Well, because like the carriers as well let Apple do it, but they'd be so much harder for Apple to set up iMessage now, because those operators are not going to let Google take away SMS revenue. And the fact that this is all unencrypted, so they can scrape these texts as well to see who, if not the content, then who you're talking to at what time and what have you.
Yeah.
Because if they give up that data stream, it's one step closer to just not needing an operator, which is not what they want.
No.
I would say keep an eye out. Oh, wait, you're transitioning to Android now, aren't you, Sean?
Yes. Yes, I am.
We lent Sean an Android phone because he's got an iPhone on its last legs. But are you finding it hard to switch because you're stuck in iMessage?
Not overly. I don't know. I've never, considering that, you know, working as a technology journalist, I'm not really overly fussed about what I use and how I use it. If it's pre-installed, I'll just fire it up. I mean, I've still just got WhatsApp on the tip of my tongue every time anyone brings up a conversation like this. So it's sort of the problem.
Scott is basically Tim Cook.
Yeah. I mean, my iPhone's right on its last legs, but...
Yeah. Still works.
Still going.
Still going.
Cool. Google... Well, it's not even a Google product. I would just have to ask you, Sean, chat or chat?
Great. I'm going to go chat, because I'm not quite sure what is they're doing and why we need another one.
I mean, you're the perfect customer, because you're going to end up using it without even realising.
This is it.
Scott?
Chat.
Chat, okay, not impressed with that, but it'll happen behind the scenes. Keep an eye out for those typing indicators if you're on Android. We will be right back to talk about chips. Sean, Intel, NVIDIA, AMD, Ryzen, teraflops.
Teraflops.
What's happening in the murky world of processors?
For the first time in quite a long time, AMD has pulled level with Intel, which is something they've been struggling for. Again, for really quite a while. This sort of really started to happen last year with the release of the Ryzen processor, the first generation, which came with a sort of five or six different models. It was still being beaten by Intel, but they came at a slightly more attractive price bracket for anyone who was sort of...
When you say beaten, are you just talking in terms of sales?
I'm talking in terms of sales, yes, and also performance.
Okay, so if, that's even more important.
Yes, so I mean, anyone who was building a sort of high-end, any sort of consumer who was building a high-end PC would really, Intel was just the best one you could buy. And this sort of continued with the Coffee Lake series, which was released sort of the end of last year. So recently, AMD have released their second generation of Ryzen processors, which have stepped up the game a lot.
Good. What's new?
What isn't new? Really, is the question. It's based on Zen Plus architecture as opposed to Zen. So it's a similar sort of
More Zen than Zen.
More Zen than Zen. Zen Plus Mark 2. So they've improved a lot on the previous sort of memory latency has come down a lot, and also without going too nerdy, instructions per cycle has gone up by a couple of percent, which is a big deal.
You're way too far gone to start putting to go too nerdy.
We're already there so this series is being led by the flagship, which is the Ryzen 7 2700X. And this is retailing at about £290 or $330.
Okay, so what would the, in pounds, what would the equivalent Intel chip cost you?
Well, so this is it. So the its main competitor is the most powerful Coffee Lake Intel 8th generation Intel chip, which is the 8700K, which is about £280. So they're about similar. However, the Ryzen 2700X comes with a cooler. And if you're putting together a rig, you're going to need a CPU cooler. And these will usually cost you about £50 to £60 for a good one. Again, if you're really spending top dollar on the CPUs, you're going to want a cooler that does the business. AMD have put stock coolers in with their CPUs for a while, and it was kind of a strange move because, again, if you're spending that much on a CPU, you're going to want the best cooler on the market or one of the best coolers on the market, and they weren't really doing that. Now they have. The Wraith Prism, and there's a different one for each version of the new generation, is a very, very good cooler, which essentially means you don't... I mean, if you're a hyper enthusiast and you really want to get your temperature down by that extra 2 or 3%, then you might want an aftermarket one. But this one that comes with the stock is really, really good. I mean, it's fantastic, which means that that's just an extra £60 you don't have to spend if you're buying an Intel chip.
Okay.
On top of that, it's the... current offering from the 8700K from Intel is a 6-core 12-thread processor, whereas the 2700X from AMD is a 8-core 16-thread.
Please explain what a thread is.
So, right. So, when you've got a CPU and it's built up of individual sort of blocks, which can each process different streams.
Okay.
So, way back in the day, each core could only produce sort of one line of instructions.
Yeah.
And then they add in hyper-threading, which allows you to have multiple threads per core. So two threads to a core.
Got you.
And AMD have always had the advantage on the amount of cores they fit in their CPU, which has meant that they would have an advantage in applications that, again, take advantage of multiple cores. So this is things like... if you're rendering videos or doing any sort of content production. If you're gaming, usually having more performance in a single... having one faster core is better than having multiple slower ones.
So is this primarily for gamers?
Pretty much. If you're going to be spending sort of almost £300 or, you know, $350 on a CPU, you're the only thing that's really going to need... yeah, it's gaming or content creation, really, or if you're rendering video.
Yeah. Isn't everything in that space moving towards GPUs, though?
It is. Although CPUs are still quite a big deal, and particularly with the, you know, sort of recent giant rise in GPU prices, it's sort of, you know, moving back sort of the pressure towards CPUs a little bit, particularly with Raven Ridge, which is something that AMD released recently, which is a CPU with very good inbuilt graphics, which can play modern games at a solid frame rate, and it means you don't need to buy a GPU.
Is that because all the Bitcoin miners are buying all the GPUs?
Pretty much. It's a combination between the fact that high-end phones are now using DDR4 memory, which is causing a memory shortage, which means that for the graphics cards, which are now, I mean, I think the 1080 Ti has 11 gig of DDR4 memory on it. So there's just a memory shortage, so the price is going up. And then also, proof of work mining for cryptocurrencies is just making the whole GPU market go absolutely nuts.
Yeah, because the Qualcomm CEO went at their massive conference the other day, admitted, didn't he, that there was a massive shortage. They basically can't match demand and he puts it down quite a lot towards Bitcoin mining.
Yeah. I was dutifully updating our graphics card coverage on Techifies the other day, and I had to double check. I was like, why are all these prices compared to the RRP insanely high?
Yeah.
Good, because it means our website is working properly. Yeah. But bad, because sometimes the price was like 3 or 4 times the RRP.
Yeah, it was really expensive. And also, I mean, enthusiasts are always going to be enthusiasts, right? So they'll always pay, you know, if your hobby is PC gaming and you want to have the best rig, you're always going to pay a lot of money. But I mean, like, a 1080 Ti is going for over £1,000, and that's just for the card.
And how much is it normally?
I think the original RRP was just under 700. And okay. Now it's sort of 1,000, 1,100. But I mean, it's hard to justify 700 quid for a graphics card. I mean, now you're in the realm of over a grand. I mean, it's crazy.
Is the pricing of components always that fluid as well? I can think of many other consumer products in which a shortage like that, first of all, would even occur.
Yeah.
But that would affect the price of like the entire market so much.
Yeah, to that extent. This is really the first time anything like this has happened. And, you know, there was a stat recently that, I mean, the amount of electricity it takes to mine one Bitcoin is like almost that of a country. So just there's that many people doing proof of work mining for sort of for Bitcoin and other currencies. It just, yeah, the price gouging is huge. And it's sort of good for AMD and NVIDIA with graphics cards specifically, because I mean, literally people are buying these things faster than they can make them.
Yeah.
But then for consumers who are trying to do it, I mean, you don't even want to buy a secondhand card right now, because the chances it's been sitting in a rack in a warehouse for 8 months being run at 100% capacity,
okay,
mining Bitcoin, which means that you could buy it secondhand for more than the RRP would have been a year ago. And then you'll have it, and it will just be, I mean, yeah, like, you know, it's like buying a secondhand car and someone's just been running it in the red for 6 months. It's, you know, it's going to be burnt out completely.
Oh, yeah, it was NVIDIA, not Qualcomm, that were complaining about
there
GPUs.
You go.
Makes
yeah. sense. But yeah, so back to the old CPUs. What you're basically getting with the new AMD Ryzen second generation is you're getting their multi-thread performance is about 20% better than Intel's best offering.
Okay.
And this is pretty huge for anyone who's creating content or, again, using applications that use multiple cores a lot. Because this is really the first time that AMD have really beaten Intel in something. And not only are they beating them in performance, the prices for the CPUs are the same, roughly, but with the AMD, you're getting a really good air cooler as well. So, I mean, right now, if you're building a rig, you don't really have an excuse to buy an Intel CPU.
Okay, that's a pretty big statement.
Yeah, which is hasn't really happened. And people are very impressed with AMD because of that.
Do you think, though, that AMD are doing this at this price, making this product at a profit, or are they making a loss so as to show the world that they can beat Intel?
That's a good question. I would imagine that they're still... So, I mean, because Intel haven't really suffered much competition from AMD really until the start of last year in the processor market. Okay, people were still buying AMD processors for laptops and whatever else, but
yeah,
if you wanted to the right top end of consumer processors, it was always Intel. The technology has been a little bit stagnant because Intel hasn't really been pressed, which is why it's actually going to be very interesting to see what Intel do in the later half of this year. When they end up, it will either be Icy Lake, was the ninth generation, because this is the first time they've really been pressed, and they've really just done enough just to stay just ahead of AMD with enough of a performance gap to make their product the best.
Okay.
So it'll be interesting to see what they offer. But right now it's AMD all the way.
AMD's stock price is spiking, by the way, so I wondered if that had an effect on their stock price, and it has. It's gone up a couple of points in the last week or so.
So also segueing, Apple are also moving away from Intel as they're going to make their own chip.
Yes
they are.
That is big deal.
Here come the lawsuits.
Woo.
Well, they've been doing it for a long time in iPads and iPhones. I don't know, it just to me, I mean, please go on after I make a mess of what I'm about to say, but I don't know, are they ready for it? It's by 2020, right?
Yes, it is. Are they ready? I mean,
you never know with Apple, like, they're probably ready.
But they've tried to buy chip makers in the past, failed, well, not failed, but like been put off by the price, and now they're building their own chips. But they also, like, hire people from those companies. So there's just lawsuits inevitable. Like, they're just going to, it's going to be like the Waymo, Uber, Google spat, where, you know, it's like they're not allowed to reveal secrets, but also you've hired them. So what are they going to do? Sit around twiddling their thumbs?
Yeah. Mm. Yeah, that's a good point. What do you think?
I mean, it's going to be interesting either way. I mean, with Apple moving away from Intel, it hasn't been a great year for Intel. Particularly, when we start to talk about words like Spectre and Meltdown as well.
Yeah.
Which again, you know, I believe it was either Spectre or Meltdown that was only affecting Intel, not AMD.
Mm-hmm.
Which again,
helps AMD.
Helps AMD a lot. And flaws of that size being opened up were kind of terrifying for sort of everyone involved, which is everyone, because it really, really was going across. Yeah, Apple apparently have a secret base somewhere in the UK where they're taking very good, all the best silicon engineers and throwing them in a lab and locking the door.
I'm pretty sure it's in Cambridge.
I was about to say Cambridge.
So it's interesting enough. But so all of that means that just in general, Intel are under pressure. And it will be very interesting to see in the later half of this year. We don't know exactly when they're going to release their next chips, but that's sort of the best estimate we have.
Apple won't cock this up. There's no way they'll cock it up. They'll get it right.
Yeah.
They might not compete on performance, but they'll get it right.
If anything, it's going to improve the PR around. What are we talking? Are we talking MacBooks and desktops here?
As far as I know, it's just desktops.
Okay,
it could well be.
Okay, because I was just thinking the MacBook Pro is taking an absolute kicking, really. Like, and it seems kind of unfair to me. I mean, I don't use a MacBook Pro myself, but the fact that the tech world will review the Touch Bar MacBook and give it some great score. And then actually in the fallout from actually using it for longer, they'll be like, actually, this is rubbish. Mm. And the keys are bad. And this touch bar is stupid.
It will be laptops, I think.
You would think it would be laptops.
Yeah, I think it'll be laptops.
Because they're so good at mobile processors. Surely that'll be the easier transition for them. Yeah, but then again, if they're moving away from Intel, it might well suggest that they're going to do it for a Mac. We will find out
in
2 years.
That's what we do for a living.
Yeah.
We're just professional finder-outers. Yeah. Well, thanks for that, Sean. Would you, at this moment in time, buy that AMD chip instead of Intel?
I certainly would, which makes me kind of salty, as I actually have the 8700K in my machine at home.
Oh.
So I'm feeling real good about myself right now.
Did you have to buy an extra cooler?
Look, I might have had to buy an extra cooler, yeah.
Rinsed. Well, thank you, though. I actually learned a lot there. Thank you, Sean. And that is the chip news. Sean, AMD or Cray MD?
Oh, it's got to be AMD.
Are you one over...
Yeah, sure. AMD.
Scott would buy AMD. Thank you for that comeback pod. We will try and do this more regularly, listener. Believe it or not, we are incredibly busy. You wouldn't know it from the crap we talk here, but thank you for listening this far, if indeed you have. And see you next time. Thank you very much.
See ya.
UK Tech Weekly Podcast.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.